Interneting yet or not? No, okay. All right, well, our internet is not wanting to cooperate, so we don't have slides, which means you'll just have to really listen closely, okay? And I'll try to let you know when you have a blank, so I'll try to keep you caught up on all that. Apologize for that. It hasn't been working the last few days. I don't know what's going on. I just, we'll call somebody and figure it out. But all right, let's turn to the book of Ruth. Book of Ruth tonight. And again, we're walking through Isaiah, walking through different books of the Bible. And tonight we find ourselves in the book of Ruth. And man, I love the book of Ruth. It's one of those, it's super encouraging. I just want to say on the outset, there's no way that we'll even touch on anything really that's in there. It's just, there's so much in there. I've taught through the book of Ruth just one time. It was over 10 years ago. It's when I think it was when I was teaching a college and career class, or maybe I was youth pastoring. I don't remember. I've always wanted to preach through it again. One of these days the Lord may open the door and I'll preach through it, but I promise you it won't be the whole book in one night. It'll be 10 sermons or 12 sermons or something like that. And so for me to try to go through it in one night tonight is pretty tough, because there's just so much in here. And so I just want to encourage you this, after we go through it tonight, maybe it's just four chapters, maybe just read it on your own this evening, tomorrow, this weekend, something. And I believe the Lord may help you to pick up some things from doing that. I'm going to actually grab a pair of your notes too, just so I can make sure I'm giving you the blanks. Also, these notes are meant to be folded. Did y'all figure that out? Okay. Instead of folding them myself, I'm making you do that labor. And because I did it the first few weeks, and then I was like, you know what? They can fold their own papers. But if you fold it, it does make a lot more sense. And you have a whole little booklet here. I do that because I made me a little binder and I put all mine in there, and it kind of works out. So I'm calling Ruth a book of history, redemption, choice, and consequence. Okay. History, redemption, choice, and consequence. And the first thing I want to do is just talk about the historical nature of the book of Ruth. Notice chapter 1, verse 1. Now it came to pass in the days when the judges ruled that there was a famine in the land, and a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. And so get the context of this, the setting. So here's your first blank. The setting in which the book of Ruth takes place is during the time of the judges, okay? During the time of the judges. In fact, this book could be called an appendix or an addition, it may be a way to say that, to the book of Judges. You could even call it a parenthesis, because you know what a parenthesis is, right? It's like when a pastor's preaching and he has to stomp a rabbit, that's a parenthesis, then he gets back on the point. You know, it's like, I'm going to take a break in the middle of a sentence, share a little information, then I'm going to finish my sentence. Well, Ruth takes place during the time of the judges, and that's really important to understand. I mean, when you read Ruth, and I'll talk about this more in a second, but when you read it in the context of the judges, boy, it is such a powerful story that took place. I added this just because we just came through Judges, and I thought, man, I was going to do some review tonight. I forgot about that. I got to bring candy in here, though, to get you guys motivated to do the review. We'll do a review next week. I was going to review the different chapters. We'll do that next week. But just a little review of Judges. Remember, Judges is that six cycles of apostasy, okay? What happens in the book of Judges is the key verse, which we'll look at in just a second, is in those days there was no king in Israel. Every man did that which was right in his own eyes. And in Judges, you very much see that happen, and Israel keeps getting away from God. Then the Lord allows some other nation to oppress them, and they cry to God, and then God raises up a judge and delivers them. And that cycle, after they're delivered, you think, okay, everything's good. Nope, they just go right off the cliff again, and they do that six times we see in the book of Judges. Does anyone remember how many judges there are in Judges? 12, good, there's 12. Some say 13 because of Elimelech. But Elimelech was kind of a usurper of authority. He definitely wasn't a judge that God raised up. But there are six standout judges, and those are the ones that God brought up to sort of bring them out from under the oppression they were in when they cried to the Lord. And I'm so glad when we cry to the Lord, he raises up a judge, right? He answers. He forgives. That's the God that we serve. Now, in the book of Judges, I didn't really mention this because I was kind of keeping it simple, but there are a couple appendices or parentheses to the book of Judges. And so in your notes there seem to be three appendices to the book of Judges. There's three. The first one is Judges 17 and 18. If you'll just turn back, if you're in Ruth 1, just turn back a few pages to Judges 17 and 18. And we're not going to take time to read it, but it's the religious perversion in the times of the judges. The religious perversion. So meaning this, the priests, those that were supposed to be spiritual leaders, were wicked. And so the story goes in Judges 17 and 18 of Micah, and who is supposed to be a man of God, but deliberately set up idols in his home in defiance to that the commandments of the Lord. And so number one there is the religious perversion. And notice in chapter 17 and verse number 5, we find our key verse. And the man Micah had an house of gods and made an ephod and a teraphim and consecrated one of his sons who became his priest. In those days, there was no king in Israel, but every man did that which was right in his own eyes. And so we have this story in Judges 17 and 18, which is like I said, it's just kind of melded within the history there. It's something that happened during the time of the judges. Another one we have, number two there, is in Judges 19 through the end of the book, and it's the moral pollution during the times of the judges. The moral pollution. These three chapters cover the story of a Levite whose concubine was abused to death. If you've ever read through Judges, you will remember the story. Just a horrible thing that goes on by the tribe. And then so we see this perversion going on. And then at the end of the book of Judges, chapter 21, there at the end, again, with that appendices, you see the same verse. If I could get there, the last verse in those days, verse 25, there was no king in Israel. Every man did that which is right in his own eyes. So these are just sort of stories that took place during the times of the judges. Thankfully, there's a third story that takes place. Number three, the book of Ruth. And so in your notes there, number three, the book of Ruth, a shining light in a dark time. A shining light in a dark time. So when we open the book of Ruth, we need to understand, first of all, that this took place during one of the worst times in Israel's history. I mean, when Israel was, you might say, the farthest away from God, one of the darkest times in their history, this is when the book of Ruth takes place. So we see, and so I guess I'm giving you my preaching point right up front here, but there's more we can add to this, but we see this, even in the darkest times, we can still do what's right. Boaz and Ruth are an example of, even when everything else around is falling apart, and even when all the rest of the nation of Israel is worshiping these other gods, I promise you this, Boaz wasn't caught up in all that, and apparently neither was Ruth. And so we see this story taking place during this terrible time. And I've read through Ruth and thought of Ruth and taught through Ruth before without really having in my mind, yeah, and all this happened in the worst of the worst times. And so a lot of times we kind of look at our world and how bad it's getting, and we kind of use that as an excuse for why we can't do what's right, or why we can't, you know, we've got to make some compromises here and there, because, I mean, look at our world. We don't have to. In fact, the darker the world is, the brighter we should shine. And so this story of Ruth is really like this huge story of redemption and victory right in the middle of the rest of the story where all around them Israel is really failing, okay? And so it's a shining light in a dark time. Now, I said this, it's going to be impossible to fully get to everything or expound on everything in one night. So we're going to take like the mountain peak view of Ruth tonight and just look at the very mountain peaks and the things that we can sort of glean from it in a few minutes here. But before you begin, remember, and this is in your notes, it's not a parable, but this is a true story of a family who lived during the time of the judges. So write that in your notes. It's a true story of a family who lived in the time of the judges. We can prove the historical nature of this story with genealogy that's in the book. And so if you remember, and we won't take the time to do all this, but in Genesis chapter 5, we have a genealogy that goes all the way from Adam to Noah. Okay, so as you're reading these Old Testament books, a lot of times you'll hit a genealogy and you're thinking, man, these are really fun to read. You know, just wait till we get to Isaiah 8 and we introduce you to Isaiah's son, Meher Shaal Hashbaz. Okay, so when you read, have you ever read through that and you can't even pronounce the names and you're going, what am I reading? Did you know this? Those genealogies are incredibly important. And maybe we don't always know exactly who we're reading about. But there's so much truth in those genealogies. But also, those genealogies give the line of Jesus, many of them, all the way back from Adam, all the way through Abraham and through Judah, all the way through both Mary and even Joseph, even though Joseph was not his real dad, we understand that genealogy carries through. They're very important. And so in Genesis 5, we have the generations from Adam to Noah. In Genesis 10, we have the generations from Noah to Eber, which is Hebrew, and then this man named Peleg. And Peleg was interesting because it says in his days, his name means earthquake or division, and it says in his days the earth was divided. And so Peleg was born right around the time of the Tower of Babel when God split the earth, and that gives us a good indication of when that happened. And Genesis 11 continues from Shem, going down. Of course, Shem is that line that Jesus would come through. Talks about Eber and Peleg all the way to Abraham. Abraham then in Genesis kind of takes over the plot. If you have read through Genesis, after Genesis 11, the story really slows down. And instead of getting like 12 or 14 generations, we're talking about Abraham for several chapters. And then who? Isaac, right? And then Jacob. And God changes Jacob's name to Israel. And Israel has how many sons? 12 sons. And one of those sons, the fourth son, name was Judah. Okay, Judah. And in the book of Genesis, we have a story of Judah and Tamar. You might remember that story. There's a baby born to Tamar. Actually, there's twins. One came out first, and they tied a little red thread around the finger. And then the other one came out. It was a weird time to have children back then. Anyway, Tamar had a son named Perez. Okay, Perez. Now, keeping all that in mind, go to Ruth chapter number 4. This is just for fun, all this right here. It's just so you can see that this is a historical book, and Ruth was a real person. Boaz was a real person. And not only were they real people having a real experience during the time of the judges, but their family lineage was very important. Because notice Ruth chapter 4 and verse 18. Now, these are the generations of who? Perez. Now, who is Perez? The son of Judah. Good. And you can go all the way back. And again, remember, Jesus comes through the line of the tribe of Judah. Okay, so Perez is right here. So now in Ruth, we have the generation of Perez. Perez beget Hezron. Hezron beget Ram. Ram beget Amminadab. Amminadab beget Nashon. Nashon beget Salmon. Salmon beget Boaz. And Boaz beget Obed. And Obed beget Jesse. And Jesse begat David. Now, we all know who King David is, right? Okay, so here is Boaz right smack in the middle of the lineage of Jesus Christ. Okay, so this is a really important family. He's in the line of Christ. And because of, this is important here, because of Ruth's good choices, she ends up being a great-grandmother to King David, right? Maybe great-great. I had to see how many greats, but you get my point. Because she had the same choice that her sister had. We'll see that in a minute. But because of her good choice, she lands herself husband to Boaz and then becomes the great-great-grandmother of David and the great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great, you know, grandmother of Jesus, okay? Pretty important lady in the Bible. Let's look at Matthew 1, Matthew chapter number 1. Just interesting, a lot of times in these, especially in the Old Testament, of course, you won't see a wife's name come up in a lineage because it's really just father to father to father, but notice in Matthew 1, and again, look at verse 3, just to kind of catch us up, connect all the dots all the way back from Genesis. And Judas, that's Judah, that fourth son of Isaac or of Jacob, begat Perez. There's Perez. Perez and Zerah, so yeah, they were two right there, the twins, of Tamar. And Perez beget Esrom, and Esrom beget Aram, and Aram beget Amminadab, and Amminadab beget Nashon, and Nashon beget Salmon, and Salmon beget Boaz of Rahab, and Boaz beget Obed of Ruth, and Obed beget Jesse. So Ruth's name is even included right here in the lineage, which is interesting because none of the other, there's only another, Rahab, the harlot, her name is mentioned in the lineage, but most of the time it's just husband to husband to husband, or father to father to father, rather. But here is Ruth. She's such an important character. She makes it into the line of Christ. So next thing in your notes then, the story of Ruth is a story of God's providence in preserving the line of Christ and bringing about the Messiah. Pretty big deal that she had a part in the Lord's birth and being in that family line. Okay, so now we know it's a historical story. We know we're dealing with real people. We know when it took place. It took place during the time of the judges. Now let's look at the narrative or the story. And I'm calling this Ruth, a book of redemption. So write the word redemption there in that next blank. And let's go through the story here. In chapter number 1, notice verse 1 and 2. And it came to pass in the days of the judges' rule, there was a famine in the land. There's a famine. A certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, which Bethlehem, Judah means the house of bread and praise. But Bethlehem, Judah you might say this, it's God's land. It's where they should have been. But there's a famine. And so this man, Elimelech, went down to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. And the name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife, Naomi, and the name of his two sons, Mahlon and Chilion, Ephrathites of Bethlehem, Judah. And they came into the country of Moab and continued there. And so we see Elimelech brings his family to Moab to avoid this famine. There's not much you can, I mean, you hate to put too much pressure or you hate to preach too much, too hard against Elimelech, but here's the problem. That famine ends and Naomi ends up having to go back home to avoid the famine. And you get this picture as you study. If he would have just stayed in where he was supposed to be, he would have been fed. God would have handled the problem. He, in fact, goes down into Moab, which are the enemies of the Lord, and he goes down there and he dies. And then Elimelech's sons marry, they both marry daughters, Orpah and Ruth. And 10 years later, verse 3 through 5 tells us that Mahlon and Chilion died. So the two sons died. So we have in verse 6, Naomi and her two daughters-in-law. Verse 6, then she arose with her daughters-in-law that she might return from the country of Moab. For she had heard in the country of Moab how that the Lord had visited his people in giving them bread. And so again, they could have just stayed put, right? I mean, sometimes when the seas are tumultuous, we're ready to jump, you know. But the truth is that God was going to provide for them right there. So she is now, Naomi is now sitting there, and she's lost her husband, and she's lost her two sons. And she has these two daughter-in-laws, which because their husbands are dead, they now have kind of freedom to go do whatever they're going to go do. And she decides that, and she's heard that the Lord is blessed, so she's going to go back to Bethlehem, Judah. So Ruth and Orpah, and I try really hard not to say Oprah because it's just two letters switched around, but it's Orpah. Ruth and Orpah, they have to make a choice. So look down in verse 14. And they lifted up their voice and wept again. And Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clave unto her. Okay, so in verse 12, Naomi tells her daughters, there's nothing left for you with me, basically. You know, there's no one to continue the family line. All the men are dead. And so you might as well just go back to your homes, and you might as well just go and back to your homes, back to your gods, back to those other families and marry there. That's all you've got left. And even tries to convince them in verse 13, that, in fact, let's just read verse 12 and 13. Turn again, my daughters, go your way. For I am too old to have an husband. If I should say I have hope, and if I should have an husband also tonight, and should also bear sons, would ye tarry for them till they were grown? Would ye stay for them from having husbands? Nay, my daughters, for it grieveth me much for your sakes that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me. Then they lifted up their voice and wept again. Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clave unto her. So there's a decision made by the two girls here, Ruth and Orpah, and basically it was very important. They couldn't just marry anybody. If they were going to stay with Naomi, they had to marry someone who was, and we'll talk about it in just a second, but who was legally and by the Old Testament law able to marry them. And Naomi's going, there's no one, so you might as well go home. Well, Orpah said, sounds good, and she goes home, and we never hear from her again. She goes back to the land of Moab, back to her gods, back to her people. We never hear from her again. But notice Ruth's choice in verse number 14. But Ruth clave unto her, and she said, behold, thy sister-in-law is gone back unto her people and unto her gods. Return thou after thy sister-in-law. Naomi was not in a great place in the book either, okay? And Ruth said, entreat me not to leave thee or to return from following after thee. For whither thou goest, I will go. Where thou lodgest, I will lodge. Thy people shall be my people. Notice this, thy God, my God. All right? So Ruth makes an important decision right there. And she says, no, I'm going to stay with you. I'm going to go. Your people will be my people. Your God will be my God. So we see a big split between the two sisters. One goes the way of the world. One goes back to Moab, back to her gods. Ruth says, no, I'm going with you. You serve the right God. I'm going with you. Now, the problem is they go back to Bethlehem, verse 22. So Naomi returned, and Ruth, the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law, with her, which returned out of the country of Moab, and they came to Bethlehem in the beginning of barley harvest. Now the problem, and we read it in verse 11 through 13, was Ruth would have to remain a widow under Jewish law until some next of kin would redeem her. Okay, it's in the Old Testament law. So if you hold your place here and go to Deuteronomy 25, and I'll show you where it is, because you're going, what's the big deal? Couldn't she just go back home and just marry whom she will? In the Old Testament law, in Jewish law, if you were married and then your husband died, you couldn't just marry anybody. You had to marry a next of kin, someone in the family line that would sort of, and it all had to do with keeping the right family name and the inheritances and all of that. It was all sort of the way the Lord established it with them. But look at Deuteronomy 25 and verse 5. It says, if brethren dwell together and one of them die and have no child, the wife of the dead shall not marry without unto a stranger. See there? So that's the problem. Now, Orpah, she didn't care about this. She just went back home. Who knows who she married? We don't know what happened. But Ruth, following Naomi, said, I'll just be alone if that's what I have to do. I'm going back with you. So she shouldn't marry without unto a stranger. Her husband's brother shall go in unto her and take her to him to wife, and perform the duty of an husband's brother unto her. And it shall be that the firstborn which she beareth shall succeed in the name of his brother, which is dead, that his name be not put out of Israel. So this is when all the men die, the names die, right? And so this is the way they preserve the family lineage and the name. So when she has a child, that child will take her dead husband's name, and then it will continue on. It's just the way God set it up. There's more detail given here, and we'll read it just because it does come up in as you continue with Ruth. It says, and if the man like not to take his brother's wife, then let his brother's wife go up to the gate unto the elders and say, my husband's brother refuseth to raise up unto his brother a name in Israel. He will not perform the duty of my husband's brother. Then the elders of his city shall call him and speak unto him, and if he stand it, and say, I like not to take her, then shall his brother's wife come unto him in the presence of the elders. Okay, this is strange here, but just read with me. And loose his shoe from off his foot and spit in his face, and shall answer and say, so shall it be done unto the man that will not build up his brother's house. And his name shall be called in Israel the house of him that hath his shoe loosed. It's very, it would have been a shame on your family for you to not take up and sort of take care of your brother's wife in that way. Okay, so Ruth is aware of her plight. She's aware of all the challenges ahead, the fact that she may be alone forever, but she goes with Naomi. Chapter 2. They get back to Bethlehem, and in verse 22 of the first chapter, it says it was the time of barley harvest. And so God had provided bread, and they just happened to show up. The word in Ruth, there's a word used, hap, and it was her hap that she lighted on a field pertaining to Boaz. Well, that just means, and she happened to. But we know with God, there's no happenstance or coincidence, right? And so she gets back, and it's the beginning of barley harvest. And so Naomi tells her, actually just read it, chapter 2, verse 1. And Naomi had a kinsman of her husband's, a mighty man of wealth, of the family of Elimelech, and his name was Boaz. And Ruth, the Moabitess, said to Naomi, let me now go to the field and glean ears of corn after him in whose sight I shall find grace. And she said unto her, go, my daughter. Okay, so she didn't tell her where to go. Verse 1 tells us that she does have a near kinsman. She's verse 2, Ruth says, I'll go out and I'll find us some food, Mom. She goes, all right, where are you going to go? Well, whoever has grace, whoever will let me find the food, I'll go and I'll find some food. And in those days, you could go and you could glean corn out of a field. When someone like Boaz would reap the harvest of his field, as his harvesters went through the field and they reaped the corn, if they miss a stalk of corn and they just continue on, if the reapers look back and a few stalks back, they've missed some corn, they weren't supposed to take it. They're supposed to leave it. If they dropped some corn on the ground out of their basket and maybe they turn around and go, oh man, I dropped some corn, you weren't supposed to pick it up. And also, they were told in the Old Testament not to reap the corners of their field. So they would have these square fields, but they wouldn't reap the corners. And that was so that the poor could come in and glean the field. So when we say the word glean, what we're saying is, like, we're getting a little something that's been left for us, right? And so Ruth was going, and she was just going to find a place to glean the corn. And as you know, a young girl like that, and you got all these workers in the field, it was a bit of a dangerous thing to just show up in just any old field and start taking corn and that kind of thing. So she's really trusting in the Lord, whoever it is that I shall find, in whose sight I shall find grace is what she says. And she goes, verse 3, and came and gleaned in the field after the reapers. Notice this, and her hap was to light on a part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the kindred of Elimelech. She has no idea, but she's in the field. She's getting corn, and she just so happens, of course, we know with God, there's no mistakes, to be in Boaz's field. Boaz, though, the ruler, right, he owns the whole thing. He takes notice of her. And this is where the love story starts. And it gets a little lovey-dovey here, okay? But Boaz looks out there and he goes, who is this gleaning in my field, right? Who is that woman out there? And they tell her, I could tell you the story. We could read it. It is the Moabitess damsel that came back with Naomi out of the country of Moab. And she said, I pray you, let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves. So she came and hath continued even from the morning until now. And she tarried a little in the house. Then said Boaz unto Ruth, hearest thou not, my daughter? Go not to glean in another field, neither go from hence, but abide here fast by my maidens. Let thine eyes be on the field that they do reap, and go thou after them. Have I not charged the young men that they shall not touch thee? You see, that was a kind of an issue. And when thou art athirst, go unto the vessels and drink of that which the young men have drawn. Then she fell on her face and bowed herself to the ground and said unto him, why have I found grace in thine eyes that thou shouldest take knowledge of me, seeing I am a stranger? And Boaz answered and said unto her, It hath fully been showed me all that thou hast done unto thy mother-in-law since the death of thine husband, how thou hast left thy father and mother in the land of thy nativity to come into a land in a people which thou knowest not heretofore. The Lord recompense thy work, and a full reward be given of thee, of the Lord God of Israel, in whose wings thou art come to trust. So Boaz is a man of God. And he looks and he notices Ruth, and he hears some good things about Ruth. And so he tells Ruth, don't go to any other field to glean. You just stay in my field. In fact, we won't read all this for sake of time, but Boaz gives her protection. He tells the men, don't even look at her, right? And she's going to come and she's going to drink out of your water bottle and you're going to be okay with it, right? And he tells them, if you read the story further, he tells them that every now and then, I just want you to drop a little corn to make things easier for Ruth. And so they're going down the field and they'll throw a little out. It's like, it's called handfuls of purpose, you know? And it's just Boaz here is a picture of the Lord, right? And Ruth's the one in need. And doesn't the Lord bless us and protect us and take care of us and even every now and then drop a little extra out of the basket for us? I mean, that's what Boaz is doing. And so in chapter 3, they figure out at the end of chapter 2, Naomi does, because Ruth comes home with just a what do we call it? A bushel basket, right, of stuff. I mean, she comes home, and Naomi's going, okay, who'd you steal this from? You know, if you're gleaning, you're getting a few things to eat for the night, but she comes home with provision. And so Naomi's going, where did you get this? She goes, you're not going to believe it, Mom. I went to this field, and there's this guy there. His name was Boaz, and man, he told the servants to just start throwing me corn, and I'm drinking out of their vessels. I'm eating. I have full freedom there. And all of a sudden, Naomi puts it together. This is Boaz. He's kinsman to us. And so the story continues that Ruth begins to pursue Boaz in the next part of chapter number 3. And as the story goes, let's just read chapter 3 then. Go down to verse... man, there's just so much. So Ruth goes into Boaz. He's sleeping. She lays at his feet, and she's trying to get his attention. He wakes up. He's scared. Who's right here in my room? In verse number 9, and she answered, I am Ruth, thy handmaid. Spread therefore thy skirt over thy handmaid, for thou art a near kinsman. And he said, blessed be thou of the Lord, my daughter, for thou hast showed more kindness in the latter end than at the beginning, insomuch that thou followest not young men, whether rich or poor. And now, my daughter, fear not. I will do to thee all that thou requirest, for all the city of my people doth know that thou art a virtuous woman. I mean, basically, she's asking him to do the job of the kinsman redeemer, which is what we read of in Deuteronomy. She's asking him, said, you're a near kinsman. Will you be my husband? Will you raise up seed to my passed on husband? That's what she's saying. And so he says, I'll do that because you're a virtuous woman. And he had her eye on her, and you know, that we kind of skipped some of that story. But verse 12, notice this. And now it is true that I am thy near kinsman. Howbeit there is a kinsman nearer than I. Tarry this night, and it shall be in the morning that if he will perform unto thee the part of the kinsman well, let him do the kinsman's part. But if he will not do the part of the kinsman unto thee, then will I do the part of the kinsman of thee, as the Lord liveth, lie down until morning. Okay, so he says, now there's someone else that's a nearer kinsman. We got to check with him first. And I wish you get into it. It's a picture of the Old Testament law. You have Jesus, Boaz, he's there to save. But there's a nearer kinsman to us, our sin and the law and that kind of thing. And of course, that doesn't save us, does it? And it had to be Jesus who was the redeemer. And so in chapter 4, Boaz fulfills the law. He goes through the whole thing. He goes down to the city. He asks this other guy if he can redeem it, verse 6. And the kinsman said, I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I mar mine own inheritance. I'm not giving away my stuff to this woman I don't know. That's what he says. And so notice, redeem thou my right to thyself, for I cannot redeem it. Now this was the manner in former time in Israel concerning redeeming and concerning charging, for to confirm all things, a man plucked off his shoe. See that? You remember that from Deuteronomy? So this is what's happening. This guy wasn't willing to redeem, and they're in the town square there. They're in the place where business is done. And so Boaz takes the shoe of this guy as a proof that no, he said no. So now Boaz gets to redeem. So Boaz fulfills the law and marries Ruth, and he becomes the kinsman redeemer. Now, like I said, we just breezed over and we touched the very high points. I encourage you to read it. But notice in your notes here, Boaz is a wonderful type of Christ. What I mean by that, we lost Brazil. Brazil's gone. It's about to fall. It's hanging by one pin. I don't need stuff like that happening when I'm trying to preach. I'm just telling you. Makes me want to go get a ladder. Boaz is a wonderful type of the Lord. He's a picture of the Lord in this. The next point in your notes, what Boaz was to Ruth, a kinsman redeemer. Jesus Christ is to us. Jesus Christ is our kinsman redeemer. Sin has separated us from the family line of God. You understand that? Sunday, that's what we talked about, John 3:16. Our sin is what separated us from the family line of God. And we desperately need a kinsman redeemer who will bring us back into the family God and give purpose back to our lives. And that kinsman redeemer is Christ. So a couple things about the Lord that I think are important we should point out. The character of the kinsman redeemer, first of all, he must be blood related. So to be a kinsman redeemer, kinsman redeemer. Yes, sir. So he must be blood related. In the Old Testament law, it had to be a near of kin. It couldn't be just anyone. Well, Jesus, to be our kinsman redeemer, had to become one of us, didn't he? Philippians 2:7, but he made himself of no reputation and took upon him the form of a servant, was made in the likeness of men. And being found in fashion as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient unto death, even the death of the cross. The Lord became one of us so that he could redeem us. The second point is he must be able to pay. That was the problem with the other guy. He said, I'm not able. I don't have, it'll mar my inheritance. I don't have it. It's the picture of the law. The law is not able to pay. But Jesus was able to pay. Hebrews chapter 10 says, and every priest standeth daily, ministering and offering oftentimes the same sacrifice, which can never take away sins. But this man, that's Jesus, after he had offered one sacrifice for sins forever, sat down on the right hand of God. Okay, so he must be a near of kin, blood related. He must be able to pay. Thirdly, he must fulfill the law. You know, Boaz, if he wasn't a stand-up guy, would be like, sure, Ruth, I'll marry you. But you know what he said? Let's check with the nearer kinsman first. He did it by the book. Did you know Jesus, to come and redeem us, had to do it all by the book? He had to fulfill the law. Matthew 5 says, think not that I am come to destroy the law or the prophets. I am not come to destroy, but to fulfill. For verily I say unto you, till heaven and earth pass, one jot or one tittle shall in no wise pass in the law till all be fulfilled. Romans 10:4, for Christ is the end of the law for righteousness to everyone that believeth. And then lastly, and I think this is the best one for me, he must be willing to redeem. You ought to just, anytime you're like struggling, you're having a hard day, just think about the fact that Jesus was willing to redeem. For the joy that was set before him, endured the cross, despising the shame. I mean, he was willing. He wasn't forced to the cross. He laid down his life. Hebrews 12:2, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross. Willing. Boaz was willing. The Lord's willing. So let's do this. We're going to stop right there. So in your notes, where it says Ruth, a book of, the next one is Choice and Consequence. The whole reason I included this page is because this is going to relate to Isaiah 8 next week. And this is where we're going to get our 3 points here that we're going to look at next week. We'll really link up and mesh with Isaiah 8. So for sake of time, we'll save that to next week. So I feel as if I haven't done any justice to the book of Ruth. So you need to go read it. It's amazing. And remember, these people made these choices in the worst time. I hear that a lot about, man, just the times in which we live. Did you know God knows when you were born? He knows when you were born. He knows. I mean, I tell myself all the time, man, I should have been born back before iPhones because I don't like them. I don't enjoy them. I don't like all that stuff. I don't like the social media. I'm not into it. I should have been born. And then I remember that, man, if I'd have been born before iPhones, I probably would have died from appendicitis. You know, God knows when you're born. And he knows what time it is. And he put us here. Oh, we're not to Esther yet, but for such a time as this, he put us here at this time. And it's a tough time to raise kids. It's a tough time to have a family. It's a tough time to be faithful to the Lord. But if Ruth and Boaz can make the decisions they made in the times of the judges, when there was no king in Israel and every man did that which was right in his own eyes, surely I can live for the Lord in 2025 America. So go home and read the book of Ruth, and then we'll continue it next week. Lord, we do thank you for all that you do for us. Thank you for this great book that you've given us. And Lord, there's so much in the story we're leaving out. And I just really struggle to even know what details to give. And I just pray that maybe this would be a starting point for our own study. Just having the highlights of the book would help us to see what's going on. And I pray that you'd use it. Help us. We know we live in a dark world, but help us to make good decisions and be the light tonight, tomorrow, every day that you give us. Father, dismiss us with your love tonight. Give us a good weekend and bring us back Sunday for a great time together. Well, thank you for it all. In Jesus' name, amen.